Why don't we open up to questions? Here we go, number three.
Bill Shope, Goldman Sachs. So if we look at this, the whole day today, you've obviously laid out a framework for how to think about the strategic imperatives and how it interplays with some of these core franchises and some of the legacy profit pools and how it evolves. One of the things that you highlighted at the beginning of the meeting, though, was the growth markets being still very heavily centered on hardware, heavily centered on a lot of the legacy profit pools as well. And when we look at that statement versus the last analyst day, where growth markets was a core part of the future strategy and had driven 60% of gross profit from 2010 to 2012, how do we think about how the growth markets change structurally with all of these factors? How quickly do the growth markets move with these strategic imperatives versus the rest of your business?
Well, let me start. So the growth markets are actually many markets. As Bruno reminds everybody, we're not talking about one country. We're talking about quite a few countries at various stages of their adoption rates of technology and skills. And one of the things that always jumps out at you in visiting the growth markets, spending time with clients, is they struggle more to get at the skills they require in order to put in place 21st century solutions. They want to do 21st century, not 20th century. They're trying to leapfrog, get out in front. The skill thing tends to be one of the biggest inhibitors that they deal with. The relative rate and pace of growth varies quite a bit across, these markets. And for example, the banks in Brazil are incredibly sophisticated in terms of their years of experience. You have more sophistication in parts of Eastern Europe. You're going to have far less in Africa, and so you're going to get, a real set of differences across these different geographies. They all want to do the next new thing. Our challenge is, can we bring them not just the technology, but also the skill sets, and how do we build partner ecosystems within these environments? Because that's also part of what has to happen to build out our presence in this part of the world. As we say, no tree grows straight to heaven, and so their pathway towards penetration of IT is unquestioned and will reflect where the major markets are today. It's just a matter of how they get there, rate and pace, and a lot of it is how we fill in where they have gaps, and those gaps do vary over time. So, we're going to see some inflection points in the growth markets. We have seen some. We're likely to see more in the future, but we remain incredibly optimistic about the opportunities for the application of all these technologies in those countries. And they're going to rise to meet the level of relative spend consistent with where the major markets are today. No question or doubt.
If I could just add to that, one of the things that is common to the growth markets is the need for scale. So many of them are growing or growing their middle class. They absolutely need scale. That's why we see the adoption of mainframe. Like, we added 270 new customers to the mainframe since the third quarter of 2010. About 40% of those have been in growth markets. So it is traditional banking customers that are doing that, whether it's in Africa or it's in China or in other parts of the world. But they know they need scale. That's why they've built their banking systems in Nigeria on power systems, as an example. They know they're going to need that scale. And knowing they're going to need that scale plays well into our hands.
And maybe
it's a good business opportunity for us.
Just one additional point is actually when you look at the portfolio of work, really for many of them, there is actually less legacy because they're more about building capability. And so, for instance, when you start to look at Africa, China, Latin America, many, many clients are already using mobile, right, far more than they are the traditional internet. So we have many clients who are actually sitting and looking at, so what new capabilities for engagement, analytics, et cetera, would I be doing around mobile? So we are seeing lots of build to the future as against being bogged down by legacy from a GBS and a services point of view.
Another question. Two. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Luke Misocia, CLSA. Eric, when you look at your business and IT infrastructure outsourcing, which has been a core for many years, two parts to the question. One, consultants have suggested there's a lot of deals coming through this year. Are you seeing that? In addition, what are they thinking about outsourcing, either the customers you currently have or, again, traditionally the ones you've taken over their data center, and now obviously that the cloud's coming in as a major function? Are you able to transition them over in as big a type of way as you have in the past?
Well, what we see is this request to renew the infrastructure in the key that we discussed this morning. So there is this request to connect systems of records to cloud systems to enable them to bring these two worlds together. It is obvious that you have to optimize the existing because there's continuous pressure on gaining more optimization in what you have. But just look at the examples of last year that we communicated. UniCredit, large systems of record, systems of engagement. Allianz, worldwide consolidation, private cloud, systems of engagement. The Hartford renewal for five years, built-in private cloud capability. NiSource. So this whole value proposition continues to evolve, and we are very confident seeing that accelerate because the technology, this concurrence of cloud analytics, mobile, social, is going to stay with us. So this is a question of mixing, and having a portfolio that allows them to achieve that. We wouldn't have the retention rates we have and the long-term relationships if we didn't do that. The retention rates, look, in the last 4 years, 99% retention rate, 100 clients on 60% of the revenue, the top 500 outsourcing client, 93% of the revenue. This is constant. So, and we deliver enormous value in these relationships because if you consider, if everything is through in terms of efficiency and automation, we have to deliver that inside those accounts. And let me tell you, they are demanding. They are demanding, but we are satisfying them.
Back at three.
Yeah, thanks, Scott Craig, Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Hey, Steve, just specifically in the software business, you've obviously made a lot of acquisitions there over the last number of years, but is there any few areas where you look where you still want to add IP? Obviously, you can't get too specific, but where you sort of see areas that you'd like to add? And then secondly, on the margin front in software, that's obviously been a good driver of profit over the years, but where can we go from here from a profitability standpoint? And is it mostly a mix issue, or can you do some other stuff within margins? Thanks.
Well, obviously, I'm not going to comment on what we might buy in the future. But clearly, our pattern has been to acquire relatively modest-sized companies that fill in specific spots. And as we engage with our customers, oftentimes those engagements reveal areas where we find we have a gap. And you're either going to make, buy, or partner. Those are your three choices. And clearly, we make things, we buy things. We also partner as well, you know, to fill in those gaps. So, you know, we're very much focused on adjacency, things close to what we do, because it gives us great leverage. And our sales reps see acquisitions as being the thing that completed the solution, and therefore it's a great thing for them to carry into their customer and show them how IBM now has a more complete offering. As far as the margins are concerned, I mean, this is a very much a business built around, you know, a core set of capabilities, and the idea is to leverage efficiencies on the development side because we're using and reusing same technologies. You think about how analytics sweeps across the whole portfolio. We get tremendous leverage out of Bob Picciano's portfolio of database and analytics technology because we use it in many places. You know, it enhances our security offerings. It enhances our solution offerings, Internet of Things projects that are very much analytics driven, and so on. So you're getting leverage on the development side. And then clearly, because you're dealing with reusable components in the portfolio, you get leverage and go to market because you're not teaching your field teams necessarily brand new technologies as much as you're teaching them a new pattern of use for that technology as it's carried across into another industry. And this is the way in which we've been creating a flywheel effect within the software business for years, improving margin through leveraging things that are well connected and adjacent to each other. Over here, number one.
Brian White, Cantor Fitzgerald. When we think of the three layers of the cloud platform, infrastructure, software, where do you feel IBM is most complete today, and where do you think we'll see the most investments going forward? And then separately on middleware, what percent of the middleware portfolio has shifted to the cloud? I think there's a misperception that as we move to the cloud, middleware is less necessary, but that's not what I'm hearing today. Thanks.
I'm going to let Robert take this, but just as a preface, the starting gun just went off. I mean, this is what I think, you know, this has nothing to, I mean, I think people don't understand that we're at the very beginning, you know, of many of these transformations and shifts, right? That, you know, we have a long, long way to go, and At this point, you know, people love to handicap these races. You know, at literally the horses have barely left the starting gate. You know, and somebody wants to start declaring who their winner is. Reality is that we're at the very beginning of these things. I think what we tried to share with you, you know, is the breadth and depth of the portfolio across the things that matter to enterprises that have money to spend and represent the larger profit pools. And Robert, I'll turn over to you to talk about the portfolio here a little bit more.
Yeah, if you look at the portfolio, you look at our branded middleware, that represents about 65% of our software business. And that continues to be extremely strong because clients continue to build applications, they continue to extend the applications. And when they extend the application, some of that extension naturally will happen out on the cloud. And that's why we want to expose these services. But from a client perspective, it's additive. They do need these services. Just because I'm out on the cloud doesn't mean I have all the requirement to manage the data and the transaction and everything else that we built out into the middleware portfolio over a long period of time. Messaging is a great example. And messaging now is even more important than it was when it was within, you know, the domain of the data center. Now when I go outside, I really have to worry about messaging. I have to worry about security. So the portfolio that extends out is an extension of the portfolio we've got today. That's why it's a natural for us to extend out the set of services that we've got out into the cloud. Think about it from a client's perspective is they've got the skill, they've got the knowledge, they can take that skill and knowledge and now they can start to take advantage of the economics of the cloud as well as continue to extend, you know, what they have. So from our perspective, it really is a natural extension and it's something we saw when the web took off, right? We saw the same thing in the web. We were able to take advantage of it. We were able to expose our services in browsers and the like, and we're now doing that out on the cloud and mobile and everything else. So as that starts to grow, that's driving both sides, the system of engagement and the system of record.
Yeah, I think maybe to some of your point, I mean, I think you may, your perception about middleware's presence in that aspect of the portfolio will be different. There will be a higher order of operator artifacts that you would use to compose an application. You won't necessarily write to the same procedural layers. And you saw that represented in some of the things that that I showed on stage here and that you saw in there, that we're taking it up to another order and we're simplifying the fusion, right? We use this model to say that it used to be about, you know, building from the architecture up, and now it's really about designing and assembling, right? And in the new model of designing and assembly, you have more finished components to use. But those components have to be well seated in real middleware fundamentals in order to be able to deliver the enterprise value that any company would really look for in putting codified business logic into these spaces.
Time for one more. We'll take number four over here.
Hi, Keith Bachman from Bank of Montreal. Eric, I wanted to pose a question to you and then follow up in hardware. And the question is, can you go to the top line or should investors be thinking more about PTI? And specifically, I look at your revenues from 2010 to 2013. They really haven't changed. They've been flat. And as we think about, you mentioned mixed is an issue. Customer retention has been very high. But as you're seeing these new strategic initiatives, including maintenance perhaps being a headwind, can you grow your top line as you look at the various mix activities? Or again, should we be thinking about strategic initiatives delivering higher price points to offset some maintenance? But if you could just talk a little bit about your top line aspirations as you look out over the next couple years.
Well, let us start with your premise on maintenance. Maintenance is a very stable business. Steve has shown you in his chart the amount of volume that we deliver into the market. So maintenance is, in principle, not connected so much to the sale of new, but to the install base. And the install base is still growing. So it's growing. Maintenance will never be an exploding business. It would be against the nature of technology delivery. But we are very comfortable with our maintenance prospects. Consider on top that we have a footprint in maintenance that is so strong that it allows us multi-vendor services. Today, if you are not at scale and you have to support your systems as you roll them out globally, we are a very attractive partner. Fact is that even in the divestitures, we are still maintaining and servicing Lenovo gear. Why? Because it's a guarantee to the customer and because it's a very difficult business to duplicate or to replicate. So that's on the maintenance side. In growth, we have very many areas that grow very, very strongly, and those are the ones we focus on. Why? Because the margin potential there is simply higher. You deliver higher value, and you get more out of it. That is the game for GTS. And you've seen lots of new, large, transformational deals coming, and I think that is going to be the game plan for us.
If I can ask just the hardware follow-up then, why does IBM feel compelled to be in the semiconductor manufacturing business? If you're running Linux on top of mainframes and P's, why do you, perhaps I can understand the design side of risk, but why the manufacturing side?
Well, I think what's important for us to distinguish here is that we will continue to invest in R&D around semis, because there really are only a couple people in this race right now. And what's important to us is to make sure that we have leading edge, that we can provide that leading edge, strong thread, strong performance. And so a lot of what we make today, we actually buy from others. Some of it we make ourselves, some we buy from others. But what's important for us is that commitment to R&D, that commitment to make sure that we can have that strong supply of that semiconductor business that's out there that we need to consume in order to deliver the kind of performance our customers are looking for.
Good, thank you. We're done with this part of our program. We have one more presentation, formal presentation here today, and that'll be from John Kelly, head of research for the IBM company, and also Union College alumni, winner of the 2014 NCAA Division I hockey championship.
Whoa.